It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests, bow your heads as the Lord's mentioned.
It is John Pollock and Court Bauer back for another one shot, which, Court, if we do too many of these, we might have to come up with a different term for these. But we are back momentarily in your earbuds. How are you, Court?
I'm great, man. How's everything in rainy Toronto?
The same as I understand it is in rainy New York. It's supposed to rain all day today, all day Saturday. I think it's going to rain all weekend. It is so bad that one of our major highways, the Don Valley Parkway, may get closed this weekend because of possible flooding. That's how much rain we're expecting.
Do you have any wrestling shows in the area this weekend? Because they might actually have a valid excuse for bad weather. They don't have a good outcome.
A small little company is running the Ted Reeve Arena featuring New Japan talent on Sunday.
Oh, you don't say.
Which will be quite the show, I think. It's going to be headlined by Hiroshi Tanahashi, Frankie Kazarian, and Christopher Daniels against Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. I think this is the only date Kenny Omega has for these War of the Worlds shows that are coming up. But yeah, pretty big show coming up on Sunday, which I unfortunately will not be able to attend because I will be hosting The Law that night at the same time. But our own Dan Lavransky will be there, and you can go by and say hello.
I won't be there. I'll actually be out seeing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 featuring Dave Bautista as Drax. And that movie is tracking for a huge opening weekend. They did already $17 million last night. I think they're tracking to do about $150 million alone this weekend. And that is huge. And it's, in terms of just scoring a movie, it's scoring very high from critics and fans coming out of the movie. So I'm looking forward to seeing Drax back, seeing Dave Bautista on top of the film world, the movie world this weekend.
Do you think Hunter and Stephanie will be going to see this weekend?
They should, man.
Or are they going to wait for the reviews to come out first?
Yeah, you're referencing something that, looking back, is like one of those dope moments. Like, oh my God, how could they have played it like that and kind of big leagued Guardians of the Galaxy? I mean, it was a Marvel project. A lot of question marks for the first one going in because it wasn't like Spider-Man or a big franchise. But that movie was awesome. And he's going to do – Dave Bautista also has the new Harrison Ford movie coming out later this year, Blade Runner. The sequel. Finally, after all these decades, they're coming out with another one. So he's going to have a huge 2017, and it's too bad that we don't see him in wrestling as much as I would like, because he still loves pro wrestling, but unfortunately, you know, where is he going to go? I mean, he could go to Impact. I don't know what the economics would be of an arrangement like that. But WWE has always been home for him, and now it's just a strained relationship, unfortunately, because it's unfortunate because he could mean so much just popping up, because he's one of those guys that can still go. He still knows how to get heat, and man, he'd be one hell of a heel as part of a faction with Samoa Joe and Roman Reigns. I'm just booking on the fly here for Raw, but he would be awesome. He'd be awesome if he came back, but I don't foresee it. I don't know if we'll ever see Dave Bautista back in a ring. You never say never.
Yeah, I feel he was somewhat soured on his last run, and that might be putting it mildly. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to me, you know, a lot of these guys, it's they have a certain passion to do this because, let's be honest, Dwayne Johnson, Dave Bautista, they don't ever need to go back for any reason other than some personal desire on their behalf. Like, Dave Bautista, at this point, it just feels – like what are you saying no to Hollywood wise if you were to come back for a 6 month run? Like, it's just there really is no financial reason to do it, and you're putting a lot of other things on the table. And Dave Bautista is not the youngest guy either. That, man, you've just really broken through as an action star. That these are These are important years at this point where wrestling wouldn't be at the forefront if I was Dave Bautista in 2017.
Yeah, and he's also going to be in the new upcoming Avengers movie. So he's doing a lot of stuff already that, you know, hasn't seen the light of day. He's got a very busy schedule, but still they can get him in and out if they wanted to. But yeah, I don't know if it's something that down the road he really has a great desire to do. I mean, he wanted to. You can see once in a while he'll tweet about wrestling. And I also got to recommend the movie he did that was a big hit at Sundance called Bushwick. Check that one out if you're looking for maybe a Dave Bautista weekend in this rainy weather here in the Northeast.
Is that the Luke and Butch biography?
That would be Bushwhack. This is Bushwick.
Oh, I see.
Come on.
So are you quietly representing Dave Bautista? Like, I look at my topics here. Number one after 2 weeks was Guardians of the Galaxy. That was your pressing topic this week.
No, that wasn't topic number one. Topic number one was Bauer and Pollock now have our own shirt. Even though the show is technically over and we do these one-shots, we have finally put out a shirt, which you can get at mlwshop.com, and it makes for great pizza and coffee money for John and I.
We're like ECW, where it made money after the show, after well, the promotion's existence.
Let's not go that far. We haven't made any money yet.
That's true. Let's move on. Let's chat about the ESPN cuts. This has been covered extensively. It was an awful day for those in Bristol, Connecticut last week with 100 people cut. This came a year and a half after some 300 behind the scenes people were let go at ESPN. They've certainly been hit hard with losses in subscribers. I mean, over the last number of years, I believe the number is anywhere from 10 to 12 million subscribers have dropped ESPN from their packaging. And this is definitely, Court, a somewhat of a wrestling story, but more so to me a mixed martial arts story because of the U.S. domestic rights package up next year and whether or not ESPN is going to be at the table bidding for those rights, which would theoretically push them up, or if this is going to be a ripple effect to the industry that's going to scale back on big sports rights, because so many of them are tied in for the next number of years, and the UFC is a major set of rights that are up in the near future because these negotiations are going to be starting over the next year.
I don't think Ari Emanuel is going to let UFC suffer too much. He's an incredible negotiator and he has a lot on the line and he has a lot of influence and power in Hollywood. So I'm not too concerned about how the UFC does in their next deal. I think they'll be okay. The bigger story, like you're saying, is we have this shift, and what's a show worth today? And what's a league, a promotion worth to a network? That content is always going to be king, but how much are you willing to pay for it? And I think it used to be where you'd give maybe 80% of that pie up to the exclusive rights to, say, an NBC Universal or a Fox. And now you're going to be looking at splitting that pie up. You're going to be maybe not giving them across the board exclusivity, but you're going to be carving out a slice of that pie for the cable rights, carving up another slice for the digital rights, carving up another slice for the mobile rights. I mean, it's like it's going to be across the board different ways you're going to have to diversify how you monetize your content. And it sounds like a lot of gibberish, but basically the bottom line is this pie is going to be split up into smaller and smaller slices as time goes on, because you're just going to need to find ways to max out monetizing your content, and it's not going to be as easy as just locking in one big deal. You're going to have to be able to come together with a lot of different deals and make the most out of those deals combined. And it's going to be – you're going to have to be pretty savvy in navigating how you do that, because there's a lot of emerging pipelines for content. You want to make sure you're in the right place and you're getting the most money for it, and whether it's going to all be – the traditional avenues, maybe not so much anymore. Maybe it's going to be less going down the paths that we've always said, you know, are the big money paths, because ESPN's in a bad spot. They've lost all those viewers you mentioned, millions. And at the same time, they're getting $7-$8 per subscriber. Now that's not coming in. Plus they're on the hook for NBA, MLB, NFL, big billion-dollar contracts.
Yeah, I've got the numbers here, Court. These are staggering, okay? The NFL – they extended in 2011 an 8-year deal worth $15.2 billion. They're in the midst of a 9-year deal with the NBA worth $12 billion. And they extended their Major League Baseball rights for $5.6 billion through 2021. So these are long-term deals they're in the middle of. And you could also see the opposite effect, Court, of a lot less original programming and just going heavy on sports rights and live programming.
Right now, like a company like ESPN is just heavy across the board with talent, with commitments to sports leagues. They have to cut the fat, and there's a lot of talented people that have lost their jobs, and I've known some of them, and to have this story play out so publicly, it's been very hard for some of them and their families. Being a public figure, you know what you're signing up for, but it's also very tough time for people up in Bristol, Connecticut, and it's a changing world. You look at the ability for like independent wrestling companies to get your product out there so much easier now, and so for those companies from the ground floor looking up, it's great. But if you're in the penthouse looking down, you got to have concern because the plush setup you've had for a long time is likely going to be changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One other thing on this is the fact that you are getting more and more of streaming services that are getting in the game here. We saw this with Twitter last season with the NFL, and this season Amazon Prime has committed $50 million to air 10 Thursday night NFL games, which I think is worth watching, because if they have a big success here and find a way to distribute these games better than Twitter did, then you might see other services that are getting in on sports programming for these various services. Do you foresee yourself watching any NFL on Amazon Prime?
I wouldn't be opposed to it. Twitter was a lot more disruptive to my viewing pattern. It was not going to happen that I was going to watch it. I did tune in just to see for a moment what it was like to have that experience. I'm like, I want to be on Twitter watching a game, not in a designated spot on my Twitter watching the game. It was right. Too disruptive to, I think, a lot of people's patterns and how they communicate while experiencing a sporting event or whatever. Amazon, I could see it possibly working, sure.
Well, that can take us over. The WWE had their earnings report for the first quarter of 2017 on Thursday. Extraordinary revenue of $188.4 million. That's up from $171.1 for the first quarter last year, but only taking in $900,000 in profit off of that huge figure. So that's down from $13.9 million. I guess you've probably had a chance, Court, to go over some of the key numbers. The WWE Network, as of March 31st, had 1,697,000 subscribers, and the day after WrestleMania 33, there were a grand total of 1,949,000 subs, 1.66 of which were paid, and 288,000 free. So, they're hovering on that 2 million mark if you mm-hmm. include the free subscribers, which that's the gimmick that they have really latched themselves onto, the fact that you can get this thing for free anytime you want, including for WrestleMania.
Yeah. And once they hit that big milestone number, they'll be probably a parade up in Stanford. But yeah, again, I look at WWE and you look at how fat they are as a company in terms of overhead and operations right now. It's concerning because they are not, I think, the most – they're just a heavy company right now in terms of just operations. And including down in Orlando, if you look at all the talent they have signed up and have been aggressively acquiring over the last 6 months alone, and very little cuts, one or two guys here and there, but really they are very heavy down in Orlando alone. Then you look at the WWE Network and the infrastructure they have on the road now to do this stuff. It is far from a lean, mean operating machine, and that's typically how Vince likes to run this, and it shows in the numbers.
What's still staggering to me, Court, is the amount of people that cancel this network every quarter. This was the Royal Rumble quarter going into WrestleMania, and they did add 537,000 subscriptions, but that was offset by 366,000 cancellations in this quarter. And it's just – and every quarter, it's gigantic figures that cancel this thing.
It is. It is, and I think some of that is gaming the system, of course. Some of it is just people say, oh, I hated that show. This is my last show. Screw it. It's a little bit of everything, and it's also You look at WrestleMania season, you're going to see a nice surge, and then it's going to dissipate after that. And so this has been what the pattern has been. So it's going to continue until, you know, they either put in safeguards so there's less abuse on the shared accounts, as well as just trying to have a more consistent product perhaps. But, you know, I look at what they're doing. There's a lot of great stuff on that network. I mean, it's like treasure hunting because you can find so much good stuff. They added just over 120 episodes of primetime wrestling, as well as, ironically, a Dave Bautista collection to their library. So there's a lot of cool stuff in addition to what we always know is on there. And I expect more to come. So, you know, it's – there's something for everyone. It's just how do you break out beyond the hardcore audience and let a more casual audience know that this is a great get. Great, it is a great value for $9.99. It really is. But it's hard to get people probably salivating over it for 12 months. You know, that WrestleMania season is the sweet spot. Everything else, you miss a little spike for SummerSlam, a little spike here and there, but not the same.
Yeah, live events as well. I mean, this is – I mean, this weekend is a perfect example of just the scale the WWE is running. They ran 95 events in this quarter, and that's not including your 40 or so shows from NXT. So that's, of course, with the brand split, that they're running more live events than ever before when you throw in NXT. And this weekend, Court, I mean, Saturday alone, you have the split crews on the European tour. You have two NXT crews that are touring, and you have the UK tapings happening in Norwich, England. So you will have five WWE shows happening around the world on Saturday.
A lot of operations going on, a lot of moving parts for this thing right now. And some shows do great. I mean, it's just the house show proposition. You know, you're going to have some hot markets, some hot regions, some hot towns, and then some not hot regions and markets. You know, it's like right now, Raw is going over to Dublin, Ireland. They just touched down there. And so they're all over the place. And business for the most part in some markets is really good.
Yeah. I mean, when you include NXT, I mean, we're looking at a schedule that's right up there with, you know, on these peak weekends that are right up there with like the insane schedule of the 80s when you could theoretically have four shows happening at the same time.
Yeah, you're a great point. And I wonder what the payoffs are like compared to the 80s, factoring in inflation. That would be a great question for some of the guys out there.
Let's chat a bit about the UK, because last week it was reported the fact that the ITV Anthem World of Sport tapings were going to be delayed, I guess, indefinitely.
Right.
And they were supposed to be happening May 25th and 26th in Preston. And from what I've been able to gather, it was described to me as insurmountable logistical issues of aligning all of these schedules together to put this together on this short notice. And the fact that it just looks like Impact has taken on so much stuff that
yes.
You would have been going from England, and like I feel like they were doing the entire series in these 2 days, which is 10 episodes, and then heading over to India for a month's worth of tapings. It's just too much. And maybe this was just, you know, we were looking at this and just feeling the logistics would work themselves out, but in practice it's just not doable. So from what I understand, they're moving forward now with ITV Studios and ITV to figure out another pocket of time where they can do all this, but that could be a while away. So I don't know. What is your level of optimism here about this this deal here with ITV? And worth noting as well that I found out that ITV Studios, which isn't a studio that directly is exclusive to ITV, they're the ones that own the World of Sport intellectual property. So theoretically, ITV Studios could shop this around.
Which is interesting, too. I think it's important when they go into this that they do it the right way and they don't rush into it. So many promoters, so many promotions just say, oh, we're committed to this date. We'll look bad. And, you know, it's all about pride and making sure you keep to a date. And so much shit is compromised because of that. And it's important when you do something like this and they have a new partner that you roll this out the right way. There's nothing wrong with having more time to get it right, because if you don't have everything just clicking perfectly, then the whole season could be flushed down the toilet. So you want to make sure that's right. And so I think it's to exercise a little restraint and punt on this and come back to it a little bit later in the summer, perhaps that works a lot better, because for Impact, they have a lot of logistics going to India. Yes, they're going to have a lot of support from Sony over in India from the production end, but you're talking about a lot of paperwork, a lot of travel logistics, and then the creative and on the ground stuff, because India and spending that time out there, I mean, that is
it's 8 hours of TV, yeah. Not even including your explosion commitments and everything like that. And you compound that with the world of sports stuff.
Ambitious. It's too ambitious. And that, again, my hat goes off them for being able to have some restraint, because promotions typically won't. They don't want to say, okay, we're gonna push back a date. That was the right call. That was the right move. That was absolutely the responsible thing to do. You rushing into this and just getting through it to get through it because you committed to that date, not good. So I think that's a good sign to me, not a bad sign at all. And now when do you do this? Who knows? The beauty is you're working with ITV, so you have that wiggle room. It's not like there's a gun to your head. You can do it and do it at your own pace.
Well, how about this, though? The fact that, as we mentioned, Saturday, the WWE is taping their UK tapings in Norwich. And you would think that they're going to be shopping this around before they just settle on this thing being a WWE Network exclusive product. If there is no signed deal in place, which I'm not aware of, does this allow an opening for the WWE to pitch a finished product?
Hey, you know, WWE's pretty damn ruthless, and they're pretty damn good at these kind of covert deals. So
I can't imagine they don't explore that option this weekend.
Sure. I mean, you have the cachet of being the WWE, number one. Number two, look how polished this is. I mean, there's a lot going for you, and the fact that you have it in the can, and then
– And ITV has – I mean, they had earmarked a date for wrestling programming. It's not World of Sport, but from my impression, like, ITV is not attached emotionally or nostalgia to the World of Sport branding. I mean, they just want a product that draws numbers, and it's pretty cut and dry.
WWE will do that. I mean, you don't even need to have anything in the can. Just show them data. WWE does fantastic numbers, and the United Kingdom is one of their hottest regions in the world, if not their hottest region. So it'll be interesting to see if that does happen. If you're WWE and the nature of WWE, you can predict that they're going to at least make the play. And for WWE, you don't even have to go for this isn't necessarily a big money play. It's more of we're locking it in, and then we can come back and renegotiate down the road, but let's lock this in.
Yeah, and I think it's also a prestige thing. If the WWE can get – like ITV is the – it's the golden goose in all of this to be on a major network broadcaster with the kind of eyeballs that are going to be watching on an ITV as opposed to a much smaller network.
Yeah, in a weird way, if they weren't sentimental about World of Sport, it's too bad there wasn't a promotion that could have connected with ITV proper to just put their promotion on the air, because that would be so much more beneficial for the long term for the UK than an isolated World of Sports series or that's kind of not exactly how you remembered it at all, or the WWE, which we know their history of coming in and doing this kind of thing through the last 40 years. You know what's going to happen, and it's not going to really probably positively impact in the long term the local region from the fans to the talent there. So that would have been the best thing to happen, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I find this to be such a interesting time period. Like this feels like we're – for those of us that weren't around in the mid-80s expansion or comprehending the business side of things at that time, I feel that's what we're in the middle of at this moment with a number of regions, the Middle East being another one.
Yeah, the WWE is attacking the Middle East, figuratively speaking. Not literally yet, at least. They're going to be doing original programming. They're doing tryouts. They had William Regal out there doing media. They did a corporate showcasing event last week. I mean, it looked fantastic just looking on social media of what they did. They always do a great job of presentation and really rolling out the red carpet and showing you how amazing the WWE does their stuff at. I mean, like, the problem is if you're not WWE and you try to compete with them, just in terms of the presentation of when they do anything, a demo in a market or whatever, it looks so impressive. And you roll in with whatever you got, you're just going to look like such a far distant second. Forget the in-ring product or even whatever goes on in WWE product, booking-wise, creatively, whatever. You just look at just the sex appeal that WWE when you're in a setting where they're shopping their product in your market, and it's second to none. It really is.
Moving on down, let us discuss the fact that the WWE crew, they are on the European tour, and a lot has been made about a very famous sightseeing tour involving many baby faces and heels on the WWE roster that Titus O'Neil, Mr. TMZ himself, let this photo go online, and it has led to a lot of debate back and forth as to what kind of a tool is Twitter in their storytelling. Is it something that is detached from the programming? Because it seems like they want both. They want to use Twitter to advance stories, but then also this is an outlet for their private lives where we shouldn't have to obey the rules we set up on television with baby faces and heels.
In this case, I'm going to say it's common sense. If this was maybe any other point in time, okay, whatever. But it really is a little much. I'm saying, listen, we all know what it is and what the product is and what wrestling is. But I still think it's it's not exercising common sense, which is something that Titus O'Neil struggles with over the past few years. You know, and you can debate should he have been suspended, the length of the suspension, but he certainly shouldn't have inserted himself in the Daniel Bryan moment. That was not the right moment for him to do that. And this is another one of those, man, exercise just a moment to think about this before you move forward and tweet that out. There was more than one photo, too. There was multiple photos. I'm just like, geez. I mean, I'm glad you're documenting this, but you don't need to share it everywhere publicly. But, you know, it's not the only thing that's been out there this week as well. We saw, unfortunately, that Charlotte Flair was hacked, photos leaked, and I feel awful for her. You know, it's another cautionary tale for anyone that's a celebrity, anyone that's noteworthy in the world. You got to be careful with what you put on your phone and what you put in the cloud, because there are people looking for it, and you run the chance of this kind of situation happening, and it sucks. And absolutely, their privacy has been violated. But at the same time, it's like after, you know, like the last situation with Paige, it's like if I were you, I would have gone through my shit and make sure all that's off the cloud. Someone once told me that worked within let's just say they worked in security at a national level, that they would never put anything they have on the cloud. They disabled everything. This is about 3 years ago. I said, trust me, if it's on the cloud somewhere, some way, someone can access it. And do you really want that? And they said, I don't, you know, it doesn't matter if it's your kid's baby photos. Why are you putting it out there for just the sake of a backup? Not worth it. For sake of convenience, not worth it. So he cautioned me never put anything on the cloud. So I followed his not that there's anything of mine out there that anyone cares about, but I don't put anything on the cloud ever since I got that advice.
Yeah, I just hope this story blows over. I feel awful for the women involved in this whenever this happens. Like, I don't even like really giving any credence to these stories, because I feel this, it almost like that's the whole goal of this, is to get attention for this. And I don't find it any different than someone that breaks into your home and steals something and posts it online. And it sucks for the women involved. And I think with Paige, I think we did see a lot of people respond to that, in a mature way. I won't say everybody, but it blew over very quickly. And, you know, there was all this discussion of what this would mean for Paige. Shouldn't mean anything for her.
No.
And, you know, these are victims here of a crime. And these assholes out there who hack into this and post it, they do so anonymously. And I would love for them to be found and punished. It'd be wonderful.
Wow. John Pollock laying down the law. See what I did there?
See? I love it. It's great.
All right. Well, you know, it's a shitty thing to have happen. It really is. But like you said, someone breaking into your house and violating your privacy and stealing, set the alarm. You know, be proactive with it if you can. I'm not trying to be preach or anything, but man, if you know there might be something out there, just kill your iCloud or kill whatever it is you're using and delete, as Matt Hardy would say, because it's just – it's not worth it for your – I mean this is – anyone that's a victim of this, the what they're going – what Charlotte's going through now, what Paige went through, what some other women have gone through, it's really hard on them. It's really hard on them because there's a lot of assholes that then go on social media and just – it fucks with them. They're humans. You know, yeah, they know what they're signing up for. They're public figures, but it's still it's incredibly difficult to go through. That's a real struggle for them. So my heart goes out to everyone that's a victim of this. It sucks.
You have an update on YouTube and the monetization of wrestling content.
Yeah, so YouTube had a big outing out here in New York this past week at the Jacob Javits Center, where they meet with their key advertisers. They do this every year to kind of – it's like they're upfront and they try to sell you on how amazing YouTube is as a platform to run your ads on and do your campaign. So they have big clients, Pepsi, you name them. They're out there for this. And every year they'll have like something big, like a pop-up concert. This year was Katy Perry. Last year I think it was Bruno Mars. So they roll out the red carpet. It is a high-profile thing for their clients on the advertising end. And they were going into this with a lot of pressure on them because they had Pepsi as one example, basically boycotting or pushing back on doing much with YouTube because they didn't like that their campaigns were running on content that was violent, graphic by nature, racist, et cetera, et cetera. And so they really pumped the brakes along with a lot of high-end staples in advertising. And
I really would hate for Pepsi to ever be associated with a campaign that draws a lot of criticism for ignorance. I mean, Pepsi wouldn't want any of that, right?
No, never. They're not tone deaf. But I think I think that's – they went out there publicly to say they are kind of half-ass embargoing YouTube just, I think, to kind of balance the shit that they had put themselves through in the last few weeks. It's all posturing. Come on. We all know that. And so
So wrestling suffers for Kendall Jenner.
Well, it's interesting, but 6 degrees of Kendall Jenner is a weird game to play no matter what. It's interesting because YouTube had to then say, no, we're going above and beyond to make sure that doesn't happen. The reality is, until recently, YouTube didn't have in-house with behind the wall real controls on where your campaigns were going from an advertising perspective. Your clients could be on any content anywhere, and it's just Russian roulette. And so they really didn't have – it's for such a big company worth billions as part of Google and their parent company Alphabet. They didn't have real great controls in place compared to virtually everything else out there when you do big-time advertising. I thought that was shocking. So then, of course, their reaction is what happened to wrestling. They just put up this fucking prison barricade around so much of the content out there that now you have like pro wrestling and so many other categories on YouTube that are paying the price. So they took an extreme measure to counter extreme pushback from these big time clients. Bottom line is now they're actually putting in controls, which they didn't really have to have the right advertising lined up with the right content, all that good shit. The bottom line on this is that you're seeing the CPM, the advertising rates start to increase for pro wrestling content slowly. Once these controls, once they actually know what the fuck they're doing on this and it's starting to happen, I think it's going to improve. That's the impression I get from my contacts at YouTube. It's that it's going to get better. Will it ever be what it once was? I can't say, but it's not going to be where it where it went in the last few weeks, about a month ago. So that's the good news, is that it's going to improve. YouTube's actually going to have controls in there, and I think wrestling will end up better than it was a few weeks ago. We'll see how much better, but this is all part of, you know, YouTube trying to compete with TV, as part of our original story at the top of the show. They're trying to be a disruptor. And so, you know, they're trying to get that advertising dollar and say that they have, you know, programming that's, you know, quote unquote, full of texture, not polished like TV, or, you know, but that's, you know, it's interesting that it's interesting to see how this one shapes up. But for wrestling, for at least the promotions out there, I think in a few months, it's going to be much better in terms of your ad rates.
Yes. The quote was, "Our users don't come to YouTube for polish, they come for texture," which Court noted to me privately also applies to the hair of George Barrios, which was the line of the week.
Well, yes. And thank you for sharing private conversations.
Yeah, well, Facebook is also, I mean, heavily involved in this. They just announced they're hiring 3,000 people just to monitor content that is going up, which Facebook has faced a lot of scrutiny because of Facebook Live and the fact that you're seeing people committing violent crimes, suicides that are getting broadcast on Facebook. And now these 3,000 people that have been hired, I mean, that is their job description now, is to combat this. And that's when you're asking for user-generated content without filters. Yeah, sadly, it's going to descend into content like this that you're going to see that anyone can stumble upon.
When you don't have a system in place, it's going to be chaos, and that's what YouTube experienced. It took them, shockingly, a long time to have this kind of issue come up. It's kind of surprising, but it did happen. Also across town at the David H. Koch Pavilion Hospital for Special Surgery, the dead man himself popped up this past week here in New York. Undertaker was in Manhattan for surgery, most likely on his hip. As we know, he's been looking to get surgery done. I think that's also maybe where Mick Foley had his surgery. Don't quote me on that. I think that's where he had his surgery. So dead man came up to New York to have it done by one of the best places in the world to have that kind of work done. And so hopefully he's feeling a little bit more comfort. So, you know, we'll see if this is the end of his career. I'm guessing it is. But what do you think?
I would hope it is. I don't feel that you do a send off like that if it's up in the air. But I haven't heard one way or another if it is, in fact, the end for him. And come January, that's when this will all heat up again. And I mean, if there's one thing we can look at, I mean, Taker changes his mind about things. I think that's a common trait between himself and Vince McMahon, that, I mean, last year felt like it could have been it for him, and decided, no, I'm going to do another year. So, I mean, you don't rule anything out, not knowing the specifics of this surgery. If this is a full total hip replacement, that would kind of lead you to believe that he's got the impression that he is not wrestling another match and has been putting off a major surgery like this, but not knowing the specific surgery. I mean, he had a minor one last year that was just almost like a Band-Aid solution.
Yeah, so. And if you look at a lot of his key spots in his arsenal, that twirling flip clothesline, walking the ropes, and doing those kind of spots from the top rope, it's going to impact your hip, and an artificial hip. He doesn't want it. No one wants to go through another round of these kind of procedures. They are a bitch to come back from, just in normal day-to-day stuff. So I could see him shutting it down, but I also could see the resurrection of The Undertaker being a big promotion for a WrestleMania, maybe not in New Orleans, but the year after. Who's to say? You never know. And I understand all these wrestlers struggle with that situation, whether it's from the financial end or just wanting that connection to the audience and going out there one last time. Retirement's a hard thing to process for a lot of guys. Look at Terry Funk. Look at so many guys, Ric Flair. I get it, you know, especially when you've been a big time guy and you've been the guy. That's got to be very hard.
Yeah, I think of recent memory, the ones that have really handled it the best have been Shawn Michaels and Adam Copeland, who were done. Yep. And they were mentally done. There was no shutting of there was no keeping the door open to that option. And I think it's tougher for Shawn Michaels, that you have to applaud him, because he is not facing the issue that Adam Copeland is, where he will not be cleared to return because of his neck issues. Whereas Michaels, there's no foreseeable problems in him coming back. He's probably turned down some significant offers, the biggest stage possible. And routinely he has turned it down just because he has not seen the right scenario to come back. He thought he left on a perfect note, and it's a rarity in pro wrestling to see someone do that when the demand is still very high, as we saw this past WrestleMania season with the AJ Styles talk.
The good thing for WWE now, actually, is that they have one more bullet in their chamber, and that's Bill Goldberg, who is very actively putting out there that he's training at a high level, doing kickboxing, actually, with Ernest Miller. I thought that was a great photo op of the week. But to have another guy that you can rely on to artificially pump up a WrestleMania like Goldberg, and maybe one day Dave Bautista, that's a good thing for WWE. So they don't have to push for Undertaker necessarily as hard as maybe they once did. Of course, I say this, and this past WrestleMania, they had Undertaker, but they still wanted Shawn Michaels. So who's to say? I'm sure that there's going to be some pursuit of the Undertaker to do one more match. They went after Shawn. They seem to go after a lot of guys that they can. If they can be medically cleared, they'll go after them. I get it. The promoter is going to want as much as he can, and it's very intoxicating, very tempting for the talent, especially with that big WrestleMania payoff.
This past week, New Japan held their Dontaku card from Fukuoka. It was headlined by Kazuchika Okada defeating Bad Luck Fale, mm-hmm. and an outstanding match involving Kenny Omega and Tomohiro Ishii. And that sets up, which is now official, the rematch of the year with Okada and Omega for June 11th at Dominion at Osaka Joe Hall. What do you think of the timing? You knew the rematch was going to be made. It was just a question of where do you place it? How long do you hold it off? Is 5 months enough of a breather, Court? Is it time to do the rematch?
Yeah, what do you have between now and then to get you by? And what do you have on the flip side of that if you go to it too early to keep business chugging along? So there's a lot that goes into that equation. I think it's a big card. It's a great card to do it. You could have done it also, of course, in L.A., or you could have held off even longer. Sometimes the booking philosophy is heat them up to the point where you have to worry about that when it starts to cool off, but keep throwing gas on that fire. And that's a great showcase match. I think I'm excited they're doing it because it's a listen. They're both fantastic. They're both great rivalries, and they're a big part of the post 2016 exodus. These two players, Okada, Omega. Big time players.
I can't even fathom the expectation level that is going to be on the shoulders of those two.
But they're like, big time players.
Unbelievable pressure to top what some have called, and it's not even like you can't even laugh at the statement. If you were to call that the greatest match you've ever seen, like that's an argument you are free to make, and that's what they have to top in June.
Yeah, and you know what though, these guys are big time. Prime time players. They are great in pressure situations. I've seen great talent choke in these kind of situations. They just thrive. They thrive in the situation. And you look at where like Kenny Omega was just 3 years ago versus where he is in 2017. It's amazing. And Okada too. He has gradually ascended to this role, and he really is truly the face of the company. At this point, you know, the switching of the guard has been very successful. It's such a hard thing to navigate. People overlook that. You really look at where New Japan was, who the faces of New Japan were 18 months ago. Tanahashi, you had Nakamura, two of the biggest faces probably in the company, right? Now look where they are in 2017. And Okada totally is that guy. They were grooming him then 18 months ago to be that guy, but he wasn't really there quite yet. Now, 100%.
Yeah, to me, with Okada, it was the culmination of that great story with Tanahashi finally beating him at the Tokyo Dome last year. And that was the signal, like, Okada is now the guy. But to me, it's been this stretch this year that has been that stamp of him as the guy this year. Because I feel he could wrap up his year today, and I think he would lock in Wrestler of the Year already this year with what he's done.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they've been grooming him for a long time, hoping that he'd realize this potential. And they're pretty good about who they earmark for big-time pushes. And these guys, 99% of the time, deliver. And you know, the other thing is, I think the injury to Shibata really did change and alter the course for the next 6 to 12 months and how they're booking things. What do you think is going to happen with Shibata? Do you think his career is over?
I feel it is. He's going to be having another surgery coming up where part of his skull is going to be reattached. And when you're hearing that he's still having issues on the right side of his body, I mean, I couldn't imagine in good conscience you could allow this guy to be cleared to continue.
That's so sad.
It's awful. Yeah. It's awful that this is the end. And I hate the way in which it was done, because it was something that people had vociferously criticized New Japan over with those headbutts. And it really bothers me the fact that even as recently as last week, we saw a chair shot to the head in New Japan. There was, albeit a lighter one, still a headbutt this past week at the Dontaku card. And that's just, it's stunning to me. I'm speechless when I watch this, like even after the Shibata injury and you see a chair shot to the head.
It's just a cultural thing over there. It's going to take shockingly a lot to probably have that culture change. And on the other side, though, we did get some good news about Hanma.
Yeah, he's at least up and moving now, and he is optimistic he'll be returning to the ring in the fall and by the latest at the World Tag League in December. I mean, in the article in Tokyo Sports, I mean, he kind of stated, you know, he needs a goal to work towards throughout this process. I'm sure he's on the extremely optimistic side, but you're right. At least he's up and moving.
It's incredible. But to me, that's incredible. If you see him up, he's moving, he's walking. When I saw that picture, it just brought a smile to my face, because you see how it looked really dire for a bit. And to see him at this point where he's up and mobile, even if there's some issues he's still dealing with, some complications, it's still awesome to see, you know, him at this point of recovery.
Moving on, you want to chat about some Japanese streaming services. I know you've been watching a lot of DDT of late.
Oh, yes.
And what can you tell us about the – I don't have DDT Universe.
Dude,
so
fill us in. I would highly recommend it, because if you like New Japan World, there's so much more else out there. DDTUniverse.com has a lot of great action from DDT. It's their streaming service. And I think we talked on our last one-shot about – the train match, those kind of concepts, all types of cool stuff is up there. DDTUniverse.com has a lot of cool stuff. And then Dragon Gate, the other top promotion out there under New Japan, they don't have a streaming service like DDT Universe, really, or the WWE Network, but you can purchase like their last four or five big events, plus their Tokyo shows in general on Nico Nico, which is what New Japan used to use in between their old
– Ustream.
Yes, and, Ustream, yeah, yes.
New Japan World.
It's amazing how just what, 3-4 years ago, everyone was all about Ustream, and now look how how tech has moved us forward to all these things available, be it Pivot Share,
dropping $120 for the G1.
Oh God, but it's funny. It's like, what's the value of content today versus 2013, 2014? You know, you're wholesaling your product. That content means less. It's a slippery slope, but it's a very competitive marketplace. But it's cool to see all this content out there, and hopefully Dragon Gate gets their shit together and you can have a more proper way to access their stuff in real time, because Dragon Gate's an awesome product. Flamita's wrestling out there now. I've been catching up on it, and I really enjoy it. So if you like New Japan but you want a little something more, these are two definite must to check out. And it is Cinco de Mayo, John, and it's May 5th here. That's what Cinco de Mayo means.
It's May 5th here too.
Yeah. I didn't know if you were on some different time schedule up in Toronto. It's a little different up there. But tonight in Mexico City at Arena Mexico, they have some big action. I figure we do the show on a Friday, we should at least give everyone a little snapshot of what's going on at Arena Mexico, because they've been doing some great, great stuff down in Arena Mexico the last few months. That it's got me back into their product.
Yeah. Tonight they're in Mexico City. Got Caristico, Marco Corleone, Diamante Azul against Rush, nice, which it's also acceptable to call Rush, La Máscara, and Peroth in the main event. And then Sunday, They have an Arena Mexico show as well.
Yes, and I like that show because you have Carístico and Místico teaming up along with Marco Corleone. So you have the original Místico and now the second Místico teaming up, which is awesome. And Euphoria, La Mascara, of course, his father just passed away. So it's going to be – it's another one. And then they're doing another show a few days later. I think it's on Wednesday at Arena Mexico. And so it's cool to see Arena Mexico with just some great lineup, some great talent. And so, you know, after – like every company, you know, they have their highs and their lows. If you want to check out some good lucha, Arena Mexico is where it's at. And out on the West Coast, APW is going to the Cow Palace tomorrow night. I understand they are already in the black. So this is already profitable for APW. They'll do probably close to 2,000 when it's all said and done by tomorrow night. That doesn't seem like a lot for a big building, but it's just, you know, the costs involved with running it and what the talent's getting paid that they are now in the black. So they took a risk and it's clearly going to pay off. It's headlined by Joey Ryan versus Cody Rhodes in a steel cage match. I heard that Pat Patterson and a bunch of other guys might be popping up there. I guess we'll see. I think Dave Meltzer is going to be at the show as well, so maybe he'll do a run-in.
Yeah, he's probably the draw on this.
You know, at this point, he should do one of those old school like pose downs with someone in the from the locker room. I bet he'd actually probably beat most of the guys.
It's amazing Cody's schedule. Like, he was just on the Dontaku card on Wednesday against David Finlay, and here he is at the Cow Palace on Saturday night. It's just everywhere, this guy. And then he'll be doing he's on the ROH pay-per-view next week. I don't know if he's on all the War of the World shows. I don't. Yeah, he is in Toronto on Sunday.
There you go.
It's him and Will Ospreay.
I mean, here's the thing. You look at – you talk about how busy the guy's schedule is. There was a time, what, 6-7 years ago, you had these weekend warriors, and they just worked, you know, maybe a few weekends a month, and they were really good wrestlers, but they just weren't getting enough time in the ring or making enough money. And now it's like, look at these guys. They're all over the place because wrestling's surging in so many regions. I mean, you go to down to Belize, and there's wrestling down there, and you can get a good payoff when, you know, like Hugo Savinovich runs it. You go to Japan. I mean, there's all these tours, random places to work, the UK, Germany. It's a really good time. I hope it can continue to grow before it's disrupted by like WWE or something, because it's been great for guys like Cody. It's been great for young talent too. And who would have thought Joey Ryan, Cody Rhodes headlining a steel cage at the Cow Palace and being a profitable proposition in 2017. That's not a knock. That's like a surreal – let's just take a moment to just – focus on that. That's a pretty wild proposition. And also APW, the promotion that once did Jim Wars, once was owned by Roland Alexander, has been doing consistent business in the ballpark of like 750 to 900 up in Northern Cali. I remember when they were doing with Mike Modest and all those guys back in the day, they were just doing these Jim Wars shows in their like little training center. Maybe 50 people would show up, and then they did the APW. What was the thing that was the predecessor? It set up like Ring of Honor. They did the tournament in 2001 with AJ.
King of the Indies.
And that like basically almost financially crushed the company because it was just a lot of overhead. And to see where this company's gone now with new ownership, and they're very healthy, doing some big stuff for fans out in Northern Cali. Check it out.
I wanted to chat about Adam Cole. He became a free agent earlier this week, and he will be a guest chatting with yours truly on The Law this Sunday night about free agency. So Adam Cole, I can't imagine any promotion out there, Court, that has not been trying to get a hold of him this week, ROH included. And as you look at the landscape, Adam Cole has a ton of options, and he I include in that class of non-WWE talent that has a lot of leverage when negotiating because of what they bring to the table. And I put the Bucks there, Omega, Cody Rhodes. Like there's this group that is growing where it's you're seeing the wrestlers not so much beholden to the promotion, but vice versa, and these guys understanding the currency they hold.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a promotion, and I want to sign Adam Cole. I mean, he's a great free agent right now, and he has, you know, he's a great worker. He has a great look. He's got every quality you look for if you're a promoter or booker or matchmaker. He's great with the media. I've worked with him in that capacity when I was with Ring of Honor. And it's like there's guys you're like holding your breath. You have to just feed them all their talking points. You got to make sure they know how to dress, wipe their ass, everything before you put them on a talk show. Or I'm not joking. It's like you just want to carry a little baby bag with you sometimes. With Adam Cole, it's like you pick him up, you head to the TV studio or the radio station, and you're there just chewing gum, watching him do his thing, and you're just on cruise control. He's so fucking polished in terms of being a media savvy guy. He's impressed so many people, you know, just across the board. You know, Steve Austin had a podcast with him recently, and Steve was just blown away by him and really impressed. And Steve doesn't get impressed by anyone that easily. So, I mean, he's just really top shelf material, and I think it's time he cashes in all that hard work and all that good stuff he's done and signs on the dotted line with WWE. That's what I would do if I was Adam Cole.
Yeah, I mean, the WWE obviously is going to be aggressive in going after him, but I feel he has a ton of value to a lot of these promotions outside. Whether you are Ring of Honor, he has now the relationship with New Japan on top of that. I mean, there's a lot of outlets out there that it'll be interesting to see how much is offered Cole's way to steer away from the obvious choice that would be WWE, and how aggressive WWE goes after him. I mean, we've seen some that seem like can't miss, and the WWE, they are aggressive with some and mm-hmm. not with others.
And the other, to that point too, you have two companies that are really starting to rev up what they want to do with the U.S., and that's Impact Wrestling, that has a new ownership. A guy like Adam Cole, you could build around him for years, and he could be front and center in that company. And they need a piece like that to their puzzle. They really do. And then you look at New Japan Pro Wrestling. They're familiar with Adam Cole, of course. They have aspirations of doing more in the United States. He's a perfect piece to their equation as well. So, I mean, he's in a very, very good situation when you look at all his suitors out there. He really is the hottest girl at the dance right now for these companies.
Yeah, and a note on the War of the World shows, he is not going to be doing Toronto or Dearborn, but he's doing the pay-per-view next Friday with Tanahashi, and then he's scheduled for the TV tapings in Philadelphia next Sunday. So those are the two dates in the immediate future for Adam Cole. Sean Waltman yeah. had quite the weekend. He was arrested at LAX and then discovered the authorities alleged that he had marijuana on him mm-hmm. as well as meth, which Waltman has countered, stating he had pills that he had bought at a vitamin store to deal with a yeast infection that he has been dealing with and is having the pills analyzed at a laboratory with the results to come back to confirm his statement he has made. But yeah, he was put out on $35,000 bail. And Waltman is – I mean, say what you will about Sean Waltman, but – he is typically pretty brutally honest about himself and his own issues that he has had. He's pretty adamant here about his story, which I guess it's kind of just a wait and see based on what is in these pills, because he certainly is the first to admit that he was hooked on meth, and he is not going through those issues at the moment.
We'll see how it plays out. When it comes to the authorities, I mean, they have their evidence. How is he going to counter? How is this going to play out? Time will tell.
We can round off the show.
Yes.
Mauro Ranallo.
Yes.
Where do you see him going?
Well, it's interesting because I don't know what it was, but in the last few days, I'm like, man, I remember Dana White hinting that, you know, there was something big on the horizon, a dream team. Just around the time Mike Goldberg left the company, and we might not see it until maybe the summer 2017. Now I'm wondering, just like it all just clicks, could it be Mauro? I don't know. I have no information. I'm just purely speculating. But Mauro now calling UFC would be amazing, and you need someone like Mauro right now in the UFC, I think. They have great announcers, but Mauro would be fantastic. Maybe Dana was just talking out of his ass, and there wasn't really anything big in this line in this area of what they're doing. But man, Mauro would be a great big next move. Of course, I don't think I would have, you know, there's no way you see Mauro doing UFC and WWE if he had not had his issues with WWE. So I don't know if this theory holds any merit at all.
I have heard nothing regarding a possibility of going to the UFC. The UFC also, I mean, they had plenty of opportunities if they had ever wanted to go after Mauro prior to being with the WWE, and they opted not to. I know that there are people in the WWE that want Mauro back, even after everything that has gone down here. And I'm sure from just a public relations standpoint, it would behoove the WWE to show a reconciliation, so to speak, of having him on their air. I don't know if that's going to happen. Mauro certainly has more than enough options beyond WWE.
Sure.
And I don't know if he would even want to go back at this point. And case in point was just all of the attention that Mauro has received coming off the Anthony Joshua Vladimir Klitschko fight. That, I mean, he's going to be in high demand. I think if there's any pro wrestling company out there, they would be very aggressive in going after him. And likewise with his commitments to Showtime and for any other mixed martial arts groups that are out there. I mean, I feel Moro's going to have a full plate regardless of where he chooses to work. And it's just going to be limiting his options to what works for his work schedule.
I'd love to see him involved with New Japan. I mean, like, I could see him involved with any company, and look, it's a win. It really is. He could give anyone instantly a boost. But the weird thing is, so many companies I've worked for, they don't really seem to value announcers like you think they should and would. It's like the one part of the equation they really don't really care too much to focus on. It's like, oh, we got someone. He's serviceable. He's fine. Like, yeah, but the really good ones are worth pursuing. And if a guy's just fine, maybe you should continue to look for other guys. But it's weird. It's one of those things in wrestling that's so sorely overlooked or undervalued or underappreciated. And it shouldn't be, because a good announcer just changes the whole complexion of the experience for the fan watching the product for the 1,000th time or the first time. And a guy like Mauro, I mean, like you said, he has his pickings, and I'd love to see him in the UFC. I'd also like to see GSP versus Bisping. I guess we'll see that later this year, not this summer. In fact, Roots of Fight just announced they just came to terms with George St. Pierre to do a whole clothing line on him. They just started one for Andre the Giant as part of their wrestling, Roots of Wrestling line. So you can get GSP gear at Roots of Fight now. So it's interesting to see GSP back in the business or the sport after all these years, and now see this fight delayed because he wants more time and really screws up the UFC's summer plans.
They got to figure out this middleweight fight fast, because it's clogged up the entire division.
Yeah.
I think it was really fumbled the way they held this press conference without a date announced. The UFC wants it to be July 8th, but I think the window to finalize it it wasn't in George St. Pierre's plans to fight July the 8th. And he's also got to deal with the USADA testing pool that he had to re-enter as well in all of this. But it's just created such a filtered down anger amongst so many of the middleweights. And you heard Anderson Silva this week on the MMA Hour. He was furious about George getting this title fight and the fact that he's going to retire if he doesn't get an interim title fight with Yoel Romero. Like, middleweight is a mess at the moment because of this fight that is on hold and all of these contenders that are just waiting in the queue.
Yeah, and that's the problem. It's just, with new ownership comes new problems, and there's a lot more pushback, a lot more resistance to helping the company out and maybe making a sacrifice just to help the bigger picture, because to them now it's a more focused picture for the fighter than it was a few years ago, maybe, which isn't the, you know, from the fighter's perspective, they got to do what they got to do. But the promotion as a whole, it's like it's cooled off because of this.
Well, Court, we have lots to promote here at the end of the show. I know that yourself and Alex Greenfield have angered the entire Hollywood community by revealing the Vince McMahon movie script, but it has made for a lot of great podcast listening enjoyment. What else is going on in, MLW World.
Oh, we have a ton of...
Which sounds like a very fun theme park. Oh. MLW World.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine? You could have Jim Cornette's spinning teacups. I mean, there's all types of potential for rides on this thing. Right now, we have, in addition to a review of the Vince McMahon screenplay, which features a very sexualized Linda McMahon, which was disturbing, Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling. They talk about Billy Corgan buying the NWA. Jim Cornette talks about Billy Corgan buying the NWA, as well as the Vince McMahon movie, Donald Trump and More on the Jim Cornette Experience. Bruce Pritchard and Conrad are back with Something to Wrestle, looking at global wrestling from Bruce's time there, as well as Judgment Day. That just dropped today. And MLW Radio, of course, with Mr. St. Laurent and myself, look at the whole week in wrestling with all the latest news and stuff. And then Tony Schiavone is back on Mondays. He looked at Uncensored 95 this past week, and boy, that was an interesting event because you couldn't do any chair shots, couldn't get any color. It wasn't exactly uncensored. All that and more at MLWRadio.com.
Well, and up at LiveAudioWrestling.com, we have a brand new Review Away show covering Judgment Day 2004, featuring one of the bloodiest WWE matches in history involving Eddie Guerrero and JBL at the Staples Center. This was
crazy.
Just nuts. Insane.
Yeah, I mean, like
one of the, like a match you would never see in WWE. And even as I say that, I have the image of them okaying Brock Lesnar cutting open Randy Orton's forehead with a forearm.
Oh man, if you talk about like great mood on the Muda scale in terms of blood, this is up there.
This was something else. So that's up. And then Sunday night, it's myself and Jason Agnew on the Law at 11 Eastern. As I mentioned, we'll be joined by by Adam Cole.
They're brothers.
I just realized they're going to have to change his name probably for sure because of that.
This is a problem. I'm letting Stanford know right away. Oh, shit.
Okay. Man, just imagine the Michael Cole Bebe shirts that they could sell.
Ooh, my skin just
Adam Cole will be on the Law. LiveAudioWrestling.com is where you can go. Subscribe on iTunes and check out our video versions of Review a Raw and Review a SmackDown up at youtube.com/LiveAudioWrestling. Hey, Pepsi, if you want to chat, we can offline. And that's going to wrap it up for Court Bauer and I. We will be back when the Bauer signal goes up in the air.
Or you guys buy enough Bauer and Pollock shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/MLW.
What a marketer.